what he said, just turn on your TV. We've buried the dead and the war is over. The government files are all up in flames. His victims of torture, who remembers their names? The past doesn't matter, but the future is bright as the Exxon refinery lights up the night. History's looted like the library's shelves, but we'll fill them with Bibles, be proud of ourselves. Turn your schools into compounds, make room for us all. If you're missing your legs, you can learn how to crawl. The war is over. That's what he said, forget it all happened. We've buried the dead and the war is over. And the price was worth it, yeah, we do it again. With bombs or with sanctions, kids, women, and men. Cause we have national interests and they must be met. We will enforce them by treaty or jet. And when time is...
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yeah. We're here, all right. I don't know for how long, but we're here. How do we keep up with all this stuff? How do we keep up with all this stuff that's going on right now? My God, I just find out about the Porter Goss thing. And I do want to remind everybody, I'm not one of those ones that says I told you so, but I told you so. I told you Porter Goss would go down. Did I not tell you Porter Goss would go down? You know, he's a local boy here. Yes, had a big mansion out on Sanibel Island and lived like a king. I understand he's living up in Virginia now. He lived up there most of the time that he represented Florida as a representative to Congress. But, well, you know how that goes. Actually have a house here, but lived there. Wonder why he resigned. Anybody know for sure? Well, I think we know for sure. Let me see. The story breaks about Duke Cunningham several months ago, and then all of a sudden we don't hear anything from Porter Goss anymore. I mean, nothing. Zero. It's like he didn't exist anymore. Have you noticed that for the past few months? You know how upfront George Tenet was with the press? You heard about George Tenet quite a bit. You didn't hear anything from Porter Goss, did you? Zip. Nada. Nothing. Maybe I ought to keep my mouth shut. This is the CIA we're talking about here. And the head cheese at the CIA. Hi, Porter. How you doing today, pal? Well, we can't be absolutely sure why he resigned. Now, can we? Let's be completely fair here. We can't be 100% sure why he resigned, but... I think there's a pretty good chance. Let me see now. Let's put this together once again. You know, we're Democrats and we're really smart about this sort of thing. Duke Cunningham, limousine rides to Watergate, prostitutes, gambling card parties, high up figures in the CIA, it was rumored. Told you last week. Well, we'll see. Maybe Porter just wants to spend more time with the family, you suppose? I got someone that I will nominate for the job, and I'll bet you every doggone one of you will go along with me for it. Ray McGovern. Let's put Ray McGovern as in as head of the CIA. Can you think of anybody who'd make a better CIA chief than Ray. Of course, I know Ray wouldn't do it. I know he wouldn't do it. He's had his turn. He's given his service to the government. Spoke to Ray a little bit earlier today. We wanted to get him on today, but as you might, you know, as you might think, he's been just a little bit busy here the last few hours since yesterday. Was he not magnificent yesterday in that press conference with Rumsfeld? For those of you that don't know, Ray McGovern, first of all, just a super guy. I mean, just a super guy. I know Ray McGovern. We've had him on the show several times. I've met him. Ray McGovern is just one hell of a man. He's a man in just every sense of the word. He's just a terrific man. I can't say enough about him. Just love the guy. And when I saw that it was him in the crowd yesterday standing up and confronting Rumsfeld face to face, I about fell over because I knew Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld was going to end up talking to himself over it, and he did. Did you ever see Rumsfeld caught more off guard? It's one thing to have protesters standing up in the back of a crowd with their flags and stuff like that and get dragged out of the room. Rummy and those kind of people are used to that. It's quite another to have a 27-year veteran of the CIA, the man who delivered the daily briefing to the White House at Junior Bush's daddy when he was in the president. This is the man that took the daily briefing to the White House. This was no paper shuffler at the CIA. Ray was the real CIA, the real deal. And so when he stood up, and Rumsfeld acted like he didn't know who he was, and you know damn well he knew who he was. He tried to pretend he didn't know who Ray McGovern was. And Ray put it to him. Oh, did he put it to him. I bet you, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Rummy'd retire today, yeah, too. Just, I would. If I was him, I'd give it up. Old Ray just nailed him something terrible yesterday, and I told Ray McGovern that I am very proud of him, as I know so many of you are as well, to stand up and be the man. And there, you know, there's Rumsfeld. Let me see if I got this clip around here someplace. I think I do. Let's see if we got it here. Maybe.
Therefore, came a few protests.
Doesn't sound too good, does it? No.
Up front with the American people, why did you lie to get us into a war that has caused these kinds of casualties?
Well, first of all, I haven't lied. I did not lie then.
Didn't lie.
Colin Powell didn't lie.
No.
He spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence Agency people and prepared a presentation that I believed was accurate. And he presented that to the United Nations.
Uh-huh.
The president spent weeks and weeks with the Central Intelligence people.
Right.
And he went to the American people and made a presentation.
How about Dick Cheney?
In the intelligence business. They gave the world their honest opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that there were not weapons of mass destruction.
Really?
You said you knew where they were.
I did not. I said I knew where suspect sites were.
You said you knew where they were, near Tikrit, near Baghdad, and northeast, south, and west of there.
All right, let's just stop it right there. Mr. Rumsfeld said he did not know where they were. Mr. Rumsfeld said he did not say he knew where they were. Let me give you a transcript. An exact transcript of what Mr. Rumsfeld said about where those weapons were. Remember, he just told Ray McGovern and that crowd and everybody watching on TV that I never said I knew where they were. Here's an exact quote of Donald Rumsfeld. It happened, and I quote, "It happened not to be the area where weapons of mass destruction were dispersed. We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad and east, west, south, and north somewhat. We know where they are. Those are the exact words of Donald Rumsfeld. The exact words on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. That is the transcript. Those are the swear to God words of Donald Rumsfeld. And he had the temerity to stand there yesterday and talk to an honorable man like Ray McGovern and try and convince him that he never said that. Donald Rumsfeld is a goddamn liar. And there were actually people in that room that cheered when they were going to remove Ray McGovern, a man with honor and dignity and a record such as Don Rumsfeld and his whole band could never come close to. Never. You see, Ray McGovern knows about truth. And Rumsfeld stands there and swears he never said that? How do these people get away with this? How could anybody still believe a word anybody in this administration says? I hate to harp on it day after day, but when they put an example like that right in front of your face, I never said that, he said to Ray McGovern. Now, there may be people that were in that crowd yesterday that don't know who Ray McGovern is. They may think, they may have swallowed the poison pill like they passed out around Valerie Plame that said, oh, she was nothing at the CIA. When it turns out, well, here, I think we have a clip of that.
MSNBC has learned new information about the damage caused by the White House leaks. Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions was damaged as well. The White House considers Iran to be one of America's biggest threats.
Iranians should not have a nuclear weapon, the capacity to make a nuclear weapon, or the knowledge as to how to make a nuclear weapon. And now, now that we've got the goal in mind, we're working on the tactics.
Now, here we go again. Here we go again. This is a man standing there saying that it's important to know where the weapons are in Iran. And you remember how they tried to tar and feather Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson, her husband, in order to get their little political revenge because they knew they had been outed. They knew their lies had been exposed, and they were going to try and use their bully pulpit to make Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame out to be the liars. But they were exposed and they knew it, and so they were going to try and discredit these two honorable people. And they've been saying for 3 years that Valerie Plame was not undercover, that she didn't have any important job at the CIA. And we just hear the report that what was Valerie Plame working on when she was at the CIA? Finding out what was happening to the nuclear program in Iran. The very program now that this same administration swears is of the utmost importance to the entire world. The woman that was working on it, heading up the program, they outed her. If that is not the exact definition of sedition and treason, then I don't know what it is. And if you don't know what sedition and treason is, look it up. Look it up. If that is not the exact definition of treason by the President of the United States, by Dick Cheney, and by Donald Rumsfeld, I don't know what it is. I am sorry, but Benedict Arnold was a saint compared to these people. A saint. It's too bad that Benedict Arnold was probably the first known traitor in American history because these people, in the severity of their crimes against this nation, have far surpassed any damage to this country that Benedict Arnold ever even dreamed of doing. And Porter Goss, if you're listening, I don't care. Probably somebody, one of his relatives around here is listening. But isn't it something? As I was going on to say, before I sidetracked myself once again, Ray McGovern was with the CIA for 27 honorable years. The last few years of his career, he was the man who went to the White House every day with a daily briefing to give to the vice president, to Junior Bush's daddy. That is a position of importance and honor in the CIA, not just some paper shuffler. And Ray McGovern was an intelligence analyst at the CIA. So when he talks about what intelligence is and where it came from and what it means, he knows what he's talking about. He's no Donald Rumsfeld. He's no Dick Cheney. This man knows what the intelligence is. It was his job for 27 years to decide what is real and what is not real in the intelligence world. And he and many of his friends in the CIA knew. They knew that Cheney and Bush were lying about these weapons of mass destruction. They knew for a fact they were lying about the yellow cake uranium deal that somebody forged. And I think it's becoming clearer and clearer every single day who forged it or had it forged. If you think a forgery of that Niger claim of yellow cake uranium is beneath something Cheney and crew would do, you misunderestimate those boys by a mile. How many times do we have to say it? There's nothing, nothing they wouldn't stoop to. Nothing. Ray McGovern tied Rumsfeld in knots yesterday. And if Rumsfeld a drinking man, I bet he had a belt or two after that was over with, because he knew he'd been had, and he knew who had had him. And yet, as I mentioned before, there was a whole room full of Kool-Aid drinkers in there, booing the protesters. That's fine. But booing Ray McGovern? That was a case of student and teacher right there. McGovern was the professor, and Rumsfeld was the beginning student when it comes to intelligence. He may be Secretary of Defense, but he doesn't know crap about what went on in the CIA at the time, nor did he want to, nor did anybody in the Bush administration want to know what actually was going on. Why did Dick Cheney, as Vice President, from what I understand, the first Vice President to make daily trips to the CIA during the run-up to the Iraq War, why was Dick Cheney there every single day? Why? Because he was, in fact, trying to make the CIA make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and it just wasn't working, but they lied their way through it anyway. They wanted to have this whole situation look better than it did. But they went ahead with it anyway and thought they could cover it up because of their omnipotence, because of their mighty throne that they all sit upon in Washington, D.C. They thought they could keep it secret. Other presidents have thought they could keep things secret. Of all the things that have come to light over the years that presidents have done that have been unethical and illegal and I don't know what all, I wonder what things have been kept quiet that we don't know about. Did you ever wonder about that? I have. What have some of these fellows gotten away with that would be just shock the American public, I wonder? Or has it all come out in the wash over the years? I guess we'll never know the answer to that. Washington intrigues me. kind of upsets me a little bit lately, but it intrigues me. And, you know, of course, you can call us and comment on this, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. I feel a little personally involved in this since I know Ray McGovern and have spoken to him many times, and I find him to be just a terrific guy with a great sense of humor. You know, I don't have to tell you, he's extremely intelligent, savvy, wise, just a terrific man. Does lots of charity work. Heck of a guy. And I didn't see that happen live yesterday. I guess a lot of people did not. But when my wife told me, she said something or other about somebody from the CIA questioning Rumsfeld. I said, oh, I got to see this. And then I went and saw the replay of it. And I, oh, no, I saw him stand up. I said, that's right. And, you know, they were going to drag him out of the room. They were going to drag him out of the room. And Rumsfeld made the mistake, and it was a mistake, I guess. No, no, let him stay. Let him stay. Let him say what he wants to. Rumsfeld thought I don't know who he thought he was dealing with. Believe me, Ray McGovern is armed with enough verbal ammunition to put Rumsfeld right underneath the table, make him look like a frightened little schoolboy. If they would have put him up on that podium with Rumsfeld, Rumsfeld would have probably ended up on the floor sobbing. He may be tough as nails, but he's no match for Ray McGovern, let me tell you. None at all. And as I watched TV late last night, I saw, I don't know, some sort of a news thing that came through about Patrick Kennedy crashing his car in Washington. And you know what my first thought was? this is how cynical I am. This is how I think. I give you a little insight into my brain. Not a lot of people have a real good insight into my brain. Not even myself, I guess. Oh, maybe there's one or two people on this earth that do. Probably one more than anybody. Anyway, I heard this about Patrick Kennedy, and who knows what's up with that. I really don't know. Maybe we don't know the truth at all, something or other about a sleeping pill. And we've heard about this, what is it, Ambien, whatever they call the drug, a sleeping pill. That we've all heard about this nighttime driving and nighttime eating, whatever. I guess you take this pill, and it works so well that you go out and drive your car and eat without even knowing about it. That may or may not be what happened. I don't know. Patrick Kennedy could be completely lying about the whole situation. I have no idea. I even heard this afternoon that he might be checking himself into rehab. Who knows? Don't have a clue what the situation is, and if he's guilty of anything, that's fine. Take your lumps, Patrick. Admit it. Get it over with. Get it done. If that's the case. If it isn't, good luck to you. Whatever the problem is, let's get it fixed. But as I heard this story, I thought, well, first of all, here we go. Since it's a Kennedy, the press is going to have another field day because it's a Kennedy. They haven't suffered enough over the years. But I actually thought, my first thought that came to me, and shame on me, I guess, I thought to myself, I can't wait until the same Republican who said that we shouldn't be making a big deal out of Dick Cheney shooting a man in the face, make a big deal out of Representative Patrick Kennedy crashing up his car. That's what I thought. And don't you know? Don't you know that gas bag, Hannity, who just was beside himself that the press made a big deal out of Dick Cheney shooting a man in the face and not getting it reported, or you know the whole story. Who knows what really happened there? But Hannity just went off. I mean, went off over that, over the press. Oh, this is terrible. This was an accident that happened. It was a terrible thing. He went, oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. The press shouldn't be talking about this. It's not even an issue. It was an accident. It's not even an issue. And what was Hannity's show about last night? Well, you know, I wouldn't have to tell you if you didn't already. If you didn't know, I wouldn't have to tell you, would you? It was about Representative Patrick Kennedy crashing his car. This from Sean Hannity, the great American, you know. Don't you know the great American? I don't know. You know, I get to thinking about people like Ray McGovern, and I wonder why aren't there more men like Ray McGovern in the world. He's a man, and I do mean man, and he stood up to Donald Rumsfeld yesterday, and he made Rumsfeld aware of the fact that, you know, most of the world knows that he's a bold-faced liar. 27 years of dedicated service to the CIA. And like I said, he was the guy who delivered the daily briefing to the White House, to Bush 1 when he was vice president. So Ray McGovern is no underling who manned a desk for 27 years and having nothing to do with sensitive issues. He does have credibility that Donald Rumsfeld could never dream of having and will never have in his life, the rest of his life, as so long as he shall live. It takes guts to get up in front of a crowd who was obviously sympathetic to Mr. Rumsfeld yesterday and expose him as the liar that he is. And it takes guts to stand there and call into question the veracity of the Secretary of Defense of the United States of America. But you see, Ray McGovern is one of those rare men who believes that truth is more important than just about anything. Forget the fact that Ray McGovern just happens to be a man with high morals. Think of the 27 years he put in at the CIA where the search for truth concerning our national security is of paramount importance. Nothing more important than the truth. A man like McGovern knows that telling lies concerning highly sensitive intelligence matters could be catastrophic to our ability to defend our own country. Catastrophic, as demonstrated in the Bush administration's decision to pick and choose what intelligence they wanted to use to whip the American public and the citizens even of some other countries into a frenzy demanding war against Saddam Hussein. Ray McGovern was a CIA analyst. It was his job to look at intelligence that had been gathered and discern whether or not it was reliable. Of course, there are others at the CIA headquarters who have similar responsibility. And it is, at the very least, disingenuous to suggest the CIA gave Bush bad intelligence. He merely used them as the scapegoat to get himself out of the political mess of his very own making. He scapegoated the CIA when the public learned that there were no WMDs in Iraq after invasion. Sure, there was some CIA intelligence that said Saddam might be a danger. But there was far more intelligence from the CIA that suggested that the fear Bush was spreading concerning Iraq was mostly unfounded. Bush knew it. Cheney knew it. Rumsfeld knew it. Al Baradei of the UN knew it, the French knew it, the Russians knew it, almost the whole world knew it, but Bush has the audacity to blame the CIA for faulty intelligence when he was warned not to use the yellow cake uranium story as a basis for his war. He knew it was a lie. Rumsfeld knew it was a lie. Therefore, Ray McGovern's accusation against Rumsfeld and this administration is accurate and true, and he is to be admired and respected for being man enough, like I said before, to face Rumsfeld with the truth instead of cowering over in the corner like a lot of other people have done. I have to tell you, Ray McGovern's a man who would blush if he heard me talking about him right now. He would. He would blush if I called him an American hero to his face, because he's a humble man of principle who could have all the spotlight he wishes, but chooses to work in the background to expose the truth. And yesterday, he decided that the background wasn't the place to be that day. The opportunity arose to confront Rumsfeld, and he took it, and he made his point, which is that the Bush administration has all along maliciously smeared the CIA and gotten away with it after putting one of their own toadies in as director. who would dance to any tune the Bush administration plays without any objection whatsoever. But I guess he's tired of dancing because he's gone today. Ah, Porter, we hardly knew ye. Well, I don't know. You know, it's days like this. I'm sailing along this afternoon and thinking, well, what am I going to talk about on the show today? Shall I talk about this? Shall I talk about that? I know the Kennedy matter is going to come up, so I'll have to talk about that. Boring as it is. And then we'll get this bomb dropped on us about Porter Goss. And if I didn't get it through a few minutes ago, let me say one more time, you heard it here first, that it was going to happen. Yes, you did. You heard it here first last week. Well, anyway, let's take a moment or two. I'll catch my breath and get some more cold medicine and and be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Listen on my phone. They're sneaking and they're peeking, and I'm never quite alone. They're spying and they're prying, but I shouldn't be alarmed. They're only gonna do it to keep me safe from harm. They call it Homeland Security, so they can do the things they do. But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you? They don't need a reason, they don't need a rhyme, they don't need a warrant, they don't even need a crime. It's all for my own good, if liberty I lost. Now they're kicking down my door, making sure I really flossed.
They call it Homeland Security,
to get away with what they do. But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you? Your act. They're cruising and they're stepping and they're dressed in black. Boy, you better not be reading no farmer's almanac.
They call it Homeland Security.
They should do time for what they do.
Real time, real hard, hard time.
But I'm not feeling any safer. How about you?
Oh, yeah, Homeland Security. How secure do you feel today, How secure? I hope you feel secure today. Be secure in the knowledge that you're getting the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth here at the Guy James Show, as always. Not embellished. Oh, no. Just the pure, honest, good old truth. That's what you get day after day. And as we always say, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Yes, we're coming to you from the left here. And don't call me progressive. A lot of you get tired of hearing me say that. Some of you call yourselves progressive, and that's fine with me. I am a liberal Democrat. Liberal Democrat. Most assuredly conservative on some issues, but very liberal on others. So progressive is a name that just doesn't quite fit me. I don't know. I think my friends would probably go along with that. You know, isn't it something? The names that the tags that we have, first of all, I'm so stubborn, and I know some of my friends listening right now, particularly someone who knows me very well, saying, "Guy is stubborn? What?" Surely we're not talking about this. Surely he's not stubborn. Well, stubborn enough yes, I know that over the years, the Republicans have, through the work of Lee Atwater and the Karl Rove's, have absolutely demonized the term liberal. They have done a wonderful job on the term liberal. And we've played you the Kennedy clip, you know, when John Kennedy said, if that's the kind of person that you call a liberal, count me as proud to be a liberal. I am proud to be a liberal. Always have been, always will be. Nothing could change my mind about that. And I refuse to let the likes of a Lee Atwater or a Karl Rove demonize that term and make me start calling myself a progressive. A liberal person is progressive. But they're not going to make me run from my name. I will not do it. So there. yes. But, you know, as I started to say, we do all end up in these boxes with these terms on the outside of our own particular box. And mine says liberal. I'm by no means liberal on everything. I'm very conservative on fiscal matters. Probably more so than I've ever been in my life. Spoke to someone about that earlier today. You know, there was a time in my life that, you know, the latest sports car come out. Hey, you got to have it. Latest hot car come out. Got to have it. Got to have this. Got to have that. Got to have. And it just doesn't mean anything to me anymore. And I guess I've gotten over that. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe not. I don't know. Who knows? But we had this discussion early today. And so I'm very conservative when it comes to some things. I really am. I'm extremely conservative on fiscal matters. And quite liberal on others. So, I don't know. We get ourselves painted into corners sometimes. And I know people who call themselves conservatives that are in no way in the world conservative. They've taken that name because, well, they were told they ought to, that they're a Republican, that their mom or dad voted for Goldwater, and so they're a conservative, and therefore, you know, they're a Republican, therefore they're a conservative. Everybody that calls themselves these names, think about it. Think about what you actually are. And I think you'll find that instead of being so red and being so blue, that many of us are a very deep shade of purple. Let's be fair about it. I think that's kind of the way it is. Now, I don't really know anybody that's all liberal, and I don't think I know anybody that's all conservative. I really don't. How about you? Give me a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you on the program. I was thinking today, a little earlier today, about liberals and conservatives, and when the conservatives really got their movement going good, which really and truly, Goldwater tried to get it off the ground, but he didn't do a very good job of it. It was really St. Ronald Reagan that really got it going good. I think. And that was during the Lee Atwater days and all. And they had a great propaganda machine. They really did. And Reagan being so media savvy and all. But ever since Ronald Reagan, we were told that government couldn't do anything properly. That's what we've been told. The damn government. They can't do anything. You know, Grover Norquist, he's just in there. Government, I want to make it so small we can drown it in a bathtub. And that we needed to turn everything over to corporations because the corporations could do a job better. Well, for years, we've done just that. So much so that this Republican administration under George W. Bush, all of the senior officials, and then some, all were CEOs of corporations before accepting cabinet positions from Junior Bush. Think about that. And they bragged about that before the election went, you know, I'm an MBA and Dick's a CEO of Halliburton. We're all company corporate people. There's a word for that. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear that word for it. Some people would call it corporatism when you've got a few individuals running the government. Some people would call it fascism when that's what fascism is, really. It's corporatism. It's a few people running the government like a big business and with big business. That's what fascism is. But when you think about Bush's corporate people and his cabinet and so forth and how they bragged about all being corporate people, think about how FEMA handled Katrina. Was that a big corporate success? That's a big corporation, FEMA. And think about how Junior Bush and Donnie Rummy running the war. Think about how well they're running the war right now. Is that a success for the War Corporation of the United States? For the Department of War? Think about how much we're paying to heat our homes and fill our... And I hate to be... remind you of it, but think about how much we're paying to heat our homes and fill up our cars and pickup trucks with gas. Think about that. Think about the millions of jobs that are now outsourced to China and India. Were these good corporate decisions for the United States of America? Think about how Junior Bush is borrowing billions of dollars to give the money to the top 1% of the wealthiest people in America. Which, by the way, those wealthiest people in America are taking that money and investing it in Europe and Asia, not here. You understand that? These richest Americans are not investing their money here in this country. They're investing it in other countries. Just so you understand. And do remember, everybody, that was so happy to get that $300 cash tax bribe, if you actually got it. It was all borrowed money. It was all borrowed to money. So give your kids each $300 and help them pay their share of it when it comes their turn to pay it back, because they're the ones going to be paying it back. And... you know, Junior Bush and the Republican Party keep telling us how good the economy is, but they never tell you that in the last 5 years they borrowed $3 trillion. Man, when you start thinking how much a trillion is. They borrowed $3 trillion to prop up the American economy in the last 5 years, all during his administration. This is supposed to be a bunch of conservatives. If you give me, or I give you, a credit card, with a $3 trillion line of credit, I think even I could make our economy look good. Don't you think you could as well? He's made the economy look, quote, good in his terms of good by borrowing $3 trillion. The problem is with this, that bill's got to be paid back. And that bill amounts to $35,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. Or if you think about it another way, every working person now in America now owes $200,000 of this national debt. And you're all sitting there thinking, well, that's an abstract thing, you know. I don't really owe that. We don't really owe that much. Yes, we do, you see. we're all shareholders in this company, and we really do owe that money. And we just can't call up the Mint and say, hey, which we have done, but that's coming to an end now. The rest of the world is wise to it now. We just can't call up the Mint and say, hey, print a few more trillion dollars so we've got enough money to spend. You know, what will end up happening is like it did in Germany with the Deutsche Mark and in Brazil not so long ago. When you and I are carrying the wheelbarrows, remember those pictures? The wheelbarrows full of Deutschmarks to the store in order to get a loaf of bread. That's how devalued the currency will be. That can happen right here. $200,000 in debt for every single one of us, of all we working people. It's clearly a debt that's going to be passed down to our children and our grandchildren. And really, when you think about it, what does it all mean? If you take into account inflation and what real dollars are worth compared to dollars in the 1950s and 1960s, a time when I've said was probably the zenith of American life, I'm sure it was, in spite of the amount of income in each American household, we now have, in most cases, two people working. And with both of those people working, in real dollars compared to the 50s and 60s, it only equals 75% of the income than it took one person to earn then. Think about that for starters. That's the big lie started by Ronald Reagan. We are not better off today. We are not. Remember when he asked that question? Ask if you're better today than you were. No. The answer is unequivocally no. We were better off 30 years ago, before Reagan, and before the Republican Party with corporate money started to take over our American political system with lobbies and the misguided beliefs that corporations are people. Corporations are not people. And this, really, is this the world we want for our future generations? Are we selfish enough to just let it go this way? I hope not. Do you believe corporations can do a better job at running America than we the people? I think we've proven the answer to that is most definitely no. Almost definitely no. Hey, let's go to the phone. Who do we have on the phone?
Well, you got Dave, guy.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I emailed you yesterday because one of the issues I've been painfully aware of is the abuses and misuses of our Patriot Act. Did you, by chance, figure out anything that had happened there that people could be calling you yesterday all day and you never saw a clue that they had done so?
No, we don't know.
Nobody
we really don't.
Trying to switch or something.
I guess I ought to stop talking about Porter Goss, huh?
No. Apparently they let up today.
Yeah.
They work in shifts, so they're different.
Well, you know, Porter did resign today, so.
Yes, he did.
Maybe that's it.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. There's different ones, different hackers working different eight-hour shifts, and they don't all behave the same way, so.
That must be what it is. But you know what, Dave? I will not be silenced. I will not. If this show ever goes off, it'll probably be because of money, not because someone stuck it to us that way, I hope. So we'll see.
No, but they're not beneath cutting a cable here and there or shutting off your phone lines.
We've learned that this past week.
Yeah. Yesterday, when Alice called you, your voice answered saying, we'll put you on as soon as we can. And then she just held there for 35, 40 minutes.
Mm.
And you had no idea that she was on there?
No.
So,
and I checked the phone. We have a very exotic phone system here. If I told you how much it costs, you just drop over. it's called a Comrex unit, which is the state of the art. And, you know, I check it every day. It has a self-test and all this and that. And evidently it's working fine, so there are other gremlins at work.
So when a call comes in, it beeps you or flashes a light or both or something?
Yeah, it's got a big old light flashing right in my face.
Uh-huh.
Can't miss it.
So you would know that, yeah. And I wonder how that would have been turned off.
I don't know. I have no idea. You know, it's like right now, speaking to you, there's a flashing red light, which means you are on the air. And when you call, there's a flashing green light. And once it picks up and answers, it turns that flashing green light into a flashing yellow light. And then I know that call is up next on the air. So it's a long, involved thing here, but really a great phone system, and I'm glad we have it. But I'm also sorry that we're having some sort of problems, which I assure you are outside of this phone system.
Well, you know, in a way, they have caused me to fight on harder and longer than ever because, you know, it says to me, and it should to you, and I'm sure it does, they're taking you seriously. You've got something to say that they don't want said.
Well, there are people in this country that are saying things they don't want said, and in a way, I was so happy yesterday. I still don't know why he did it. I guess to keep from looking bad, but when they were going to drag Ray McGovern out of that room with Rumsfeld yesterday, Rumsfeld, I think, to save face, said, no, let him speak. I mean, what choice did he have at that? You know, I was glad that Ray got to stay there and say what he did. I guess
become a national hero of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll have Ray on very, very soon on the program. He's understandably run ragged after that whole episode yesterday.
Well, you know, there is a site now that you can go to that says thankyoustephencolbert.org, and I'm going to bet there's one also for Ray McGovern right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that a bit.
Huh?
I wouldn't doubt that there is a bit. Ray is a... really terrific guy, and he spends a lot of time at this leadership school in Washington, D.C. He does it gratis. He's a superlative man. He really is. I can't say enough good about him.
Well, he demonstrated that to me in this one little incident. He had the courage to take on the Secretary of Defense and wasn't going to be silenced, and I admired him immensely.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And I think the Bushes and the whole crew can be expecting a lot more of that. I think a lot of people are going to start getting up the courage to confront it as it is.
I think you're right, because how many times can they drag people out of the room without starting to look like the I'm trying to think what they used to call them, the SS, I guess.
Yeah. That's what they're trying to emulate.
The brown shirts and all. Yeah, how many times can they do that without looking like the brown shirts with their clubs that we all have a memory of seeing in the movies and so forth?
Well, in most every event now, you have get screened to get in. You have to prove that you're a totally Kool-Aid drinking loyalist.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, Ray shows up yesterday probably with his CIA credentials as retired CIA. They probably thought, okay, let him in. He's fine. They must think everybody down at the CIA. Let me also explain to our listeners, and I know a lot of you know this, maybe some of you don't. Ray is most certainly not the only CIA agent speaking out the way he has. There's a group of them. There's a whole group of them. And they're not going to take this being smeared the way they've been smeared by this administration. And they're speaking out. So it's not just Ray. It's a lot of ex-CIA guys.
Oh, I can believe it. You know, the Bush administration went through the CIA to find out anybody who had made campaign contributions other than to the Republicans, and they got rid of them. I'm sure they made a lot of enemies.
Well, and, you know, the truth is a lot of these guys are ex-Republicans. You know, they believe in Republican principles and all that, but they didn't believe in the kind of principles these so-called Republicans have. These, you know, as we've said 1,000 times, these guys aren't Republicans. They're something other.
A lot of these Patriot Act hackers, I understand, are already convicted of crimes and given the option to join up with them or go to prison. So,
well, and look what went on. Look what went on up in... where was it? Vermont? Which state is it they're looking into now? The phone hacking during the election. I meant to ask Brad about that yesterday. That all the calls went to the White House on the day of the election, and they know the White House is involved, and the ex head of the RNC is involved in it. That they had this this plan to jam all the Democratic phone banks up in the, I think it was in Vermont or New Hampshire, one of the two states. So, you know, dirty tricks abound everywhere.
That's why we've got all these criminals running our government right now. They have found devious trick ways to get in office, and they're going to try to use everyone they can to hang on to it.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
They can't risk people coming in that will hold them accountable, and there's an awful lot of candidates running right now that's saying, if I am elected, my first move will be to impeach them all.
Yep. Well, I'd certainly like to see a great big bus with all of them heading out of town. I for one, would drive to Washington and wave goodbye. I'd have a good time doing it.
Oh, I'd like to see them all taken out in handcuffs for what they've done.
Some of them will be. I don't think there's any doubt that some of them will be led out of their offices in handcuffs. And you know, I've never been one to wish for something like that. I really haven't, because I don't want the office to look bad. I will freely admit that I certainly, most certainly, did not celebrate the day that Richard Nixon got on that plane and flew out of Washington. I felt terrible. I felt terrible for the office, not for Richard Nixon. I felt terrible for the office of the presidency. And so I have an idea, probably feel the same way now for the office, but not for that man.
No, but I think they've all merited whatever consequences there might be. You know, I think they've stacked the courts. They've done everything to make sure that they continue to get away with their abuses, but there is a way.
I think you're right about stacking the courts, all that. I think that once the public comes to their senses, and perhaps if the Democrats take control of the government once again and shape up and fly right, I think to get a good move afoot to sweep everybody out of office and out of the courts as well, I might add, impeach them, that these people have put in, would be a good thing to do and start over again, because you can't impeach Supreme Court justices, you can't impeach federal court justices. And I think anybody that these people have had a hand in putting in office should go.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're all willing to play ball or they wouldn't be there.
That's right. Dave, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much for everything, guys.
Good to hear from you. Is that too radical, do you think? I've thought about it. I really have. I've thought a long time about that. What should we do if Bush is impeached and all that, and he's found to be a very corrupt man, which I think we're finding out now that that is the case? Should we just let it go at that? Or should there, in fact, be steps taken to take down everybody that he's put in federal judgeships and Supreme Court? That may seem like a radical idea to a lot of people, but I do not think, if, in fact, this administration is proven to be guilty of many of the crimes that I think they're guilty of, I do not think they should be able to leave a legacy on any court, federal judge, most certainly not the Supreme Court. And I know that seems like a radical idea to some people, but I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think all bets are off if these people are convicted of crimes, which I is looking more and more to me every day like something, well, something bad's afoot for this administration, that's for sure. I just hope and pray, and it's in the cynical nature of me, the way I have been lately, to I hope and pray nothing terrible happens in the next couple of years. I really do. They wanted their own, how was it, the Progress for a New American Century put it? They wanted their own Pearl Harbor, so that they could get their way, and don't you know, their own Pearl Harbor did come along in the with the 9/11. A lot of you don't know that, do you? A lot of you don't know that in the Progress for New American Century, right on their website, which is still there for everybody to see, by the way, they're very proud of it, which contained the likes of Dick Cheney and Bill Kristol and Bill Bennett and many of the Republicans, Jeb Bush. said what they needed was a Pearl Harbor type event to happen so that they could implement their policies and procedures in our government. And don't you know, a Pearl Harbor type event did happen. Hope to God it was a coincidence. Really do. So, I hope nothing happens like that in the next couple of years, you know, with everything so evil that's going on in the world, with the terrorism and so forth, all the violence that's happening. Going to talk about that after the break. Got a letter from somebody in Baghdad that's lived here in America for a while, and also that actually is an Iraqi, and went to the University of Chicago for a while and is back in Baghdad. I'll read you the letter after the top of the hour. It's not a good sight over there right now. It's not a good thing that's going on in Baghdad right now, and a lot of you will find this interesting when we come back to hear what it's really like over there. Aside from all this good news, the Bush administration wants the media to let you know, well, we're going to give you the truth of what it's really like over there now after the top of the hour. We're going to pause for the news right now. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in about 5 minutes and be ready with another hour of the Guy James Show.
Tuned to the Quality News Network. If you are not hearing the background sound of the teletype machines, QAN is temporarily off the air. We broadcast the finest hourly newscast in the country from 6 a.m. through 6:05 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. Just click on the live button on the home page to hear the newscast. The latest newscast is available on demand for an hour after the broadcast. Click Latest. QNN also produces two interview series, one with candidates in the 2006 election.
Doesn't sound like the news is there right now, does it? They must be taking the afternoon off somehow.
QualityNewsNetwork.com. Mm,
interesting.
If you are hearing this message during normal broadcast hours, has temporarily interrupted our news service.
All right, I guess he said it all. Temporarily corrupted its news service, so there's not going to be any news at the top of the hour. Well, good of them to let us know that right now, right? Hey, let's take our own break. What should we do? We'll take this little break and we'll be back.
Destroy Iran. Then Saddam took Kuwaiti soil, and Daddy Bush lost all of his oil. Daddy Bush attacked Saddam. He tried to take him out with a bomb. Saddam tried to have Daddy slain. Now little Georgia's got him on the brain. Little Georgia's gonna kick Iraqi ass and steal. The UN to go drop dead.
who's got a wheel?
Who's driving?
Don't know where the bus is going, but I know that the bus don't feel. Somebody tell me who's driving
the bus.
I used to know that us was us. I used to know that them was them. But now I don't know whose side I'm on. Who's supposed to win? Somebody tell me who's driving the bus. Well, I know I'm not supposed to ask questions. I know I'm not supposed to ask why. But if we don't start looking for the truth, we're all gonna fry. Somebody tell me.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes. Welcome back. Able to get ourselves a little drink of water there and soothe the little bit of a raw throat that we've had lately. Not a cold, as this allergy thing still hanging on a little bit, but I must report I think I'm feeling a little better. Really and truly, I am. So that's a good thing. That is a good thing. And thank you once again for all of you that were kind enough to send in maybe some home remedies and some advice that I ought to talk to the doctor about, which I went to earlier this week and so forth. And I did. And so I want to thank all of you. It was kind of an interesting process to see if you had an allergy. Having never had that before, I found it most interesting. So anyway, I might have already talked about that this week. I've forgotten, you know, at my advanced age, we tend to forget things. yes. As I promised you, I'm going to read a letter from a person I correspond with in Baghdad when they have electricity, that is. Of course, that's some of the good news over there, that once in a great while they do have some electricity in Baghdad, the capital city. But someone brought it to my attention the other day, once again. Who do you think is going to be the Democratic nominee for president? And I know it's so early to talk about that. It really is, and on the one hand. On the other hand, maybe not. The other side certainly getting started on it. I've wonder about the Republicans. I really do. I'm probably more intrigued about them right now than I am the Democrats who are going to run. I think they might turn to somebody who's just squeaky clean, somebody that hasn't had to vote on the war, someone that hasn't had to kowtow to George Bush, someone that's just pretty much been his own man and stayed out of Washington Republican Party politics. Might be Mitt Romney. What do you think? Fresh face, you know. Good-looking guy. Well-spoken. Good family man. He is a Republican, though. Don't forget that. And make no mistake about it, he is a tried-and-true Republican. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him right at the top. Giuliani and McCain, I don't know. They've both got a lot of warts. If Giuliani got the nod, I would say that would be the most hypocritical thing that the Republican Party's ever done, to put him up after being anti-abortion all these years and him being pro-choice. Would the evangelicals completely run the other direction from John McCain? I think they probably would. They'd run the other way from Giuliani as well. I don't know. I don't know what would happen there. Going to be interesting to see. But on our side of the coin, I don't think there's any question that we have a front runner. And I think it probably is Hillary Clinton. And I heard Hillary Clinton the other day talking about the war. And I'd like to hear her talk some more about the war. And it's a subject she tries to duck whenever she can. And can any of you tell me, in no uncertain terms, just what are her views on the war? I mean, she voted for it. And she hasn't made any real strong statements against it. She's made some statements against some of the mistakes we've made, but she has not made any strong statements against the war. She's not, that I know of, lent her voice to any of the plans that the various Democrats have come up with to possibly extricate the U.S. forces from this disaster that is Junior Bush's war. So I guess what I'm asking is, what's her take on Bush's war? Get out now, gradual withdrawal, what is it? Haven't really heard her spell it out. How much more American money is she willing to approve for Bush's war? We need to know these things. And we need to know them before even giving her the slightest consideration for the nomination to run for president. Boy, I bet people probably turning off the show right now, people that love Hillary Clinton. Don't get me wrong here. I really like Hillary Clinton a lot. Had dinner right, I mean, not across the table. I mean, right exactly beside her a couple of times, and enjoyed her conversation throughout dinner and sat in on some meetings with her. And she's a lovely lady. She's a highly intelligent person, very engaging. First-class politician, I must add. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I will not back any Democrat for the presidency if they voted for the war or if they don't apologize to the Democratic Party voters for doing so and admit it, and you know, admitting to us that it was a mistake. Whoever does it's going to have to do that to suit me. Is that too is that a little too rough, do you think? I don't think so. And something so catastrophically wrong for America as this war, I think it would be a good thing for any politicians to cleanse their soul and come before the voters and say, I was wrong. I made a mistake. It takes a big person to do that, and we shouldn't have anybody who's not a big person running for the office of president. So I hope Hillary will come before the Democratic voters and say, I made a mistake, it was the wrong thing to do, and let's straighten it out now. You know, I believe that, and if I'm being a little too harsh, why, so be it, but that's me. Any Democrat running for office that backs this war should not be considered for office, not a House member, not a senator, not the president. So, Hillary, where are you on this war? I want to know. I absolutely want to know. I want to read to you right now a letter I got from a cyber friend in Baghdad. They get electricity now and then and can use the internet. This is from Amjad El-Samari. And the letter says as follows. Since the fall of Baghdad to U.S. troops on April 9, 2003, a new kind of war has started in our country, which is more barbaric, more vicious, and more evil the modern world has ever seen. Instead of planting democracy, tolerance, human rights, and reconciliation, the U.S. occupation has bred sectarian and ethnic strife with an atmosphere of insecurity in which human life has become worthless. Sectarian tensions, which were non-existent, began to surface under the banner of multi-party system and pluralism. The occupation may not directly be responsible for the current divisions in the society, but it has encouraged them and paved the way for them to take roots that have become almost impossible to wipe out. The sectarian ditches were dug by Iraqi hands, but the occupation helped in the digging, filling these ditches with fuel and setting them on fire. It is indeed naive to blame the bombing of the Shrine of Holy Imams in Samarra for the current upheaval. Sectarian tensions were simmering, and the bombing was only meant to add more fuel to the already raging sectarian fire. Iraqis have gone through wars and suffering, and the hardest were the 13-year-long UN trade sanctions, which impoverished the Iraqi society, emaciated its women and children, and had almost ruined the infrastructure. It is good to try to contain the disturbances in the aftermath of Shrine's bombing, but those in charge must remember civil strife will persist unless the reasons that led to its creation are addressed. There are factions who seem to be pleased to see the country in such turmoil. They think immersion in sectarian schemes and divisions and the shedding of streams of innocent blood will serve their vicious intentions. Filling Iraqi streets with tanks, armored personnel carrier, and troops will not solve this problem. Iraqi leaders need to utilize this embarrassing moment to agree upon a national project to save the country. We are in need of a broad national government that reinforces national unity, dissolves armed militias, puts an end to kidnapping and killing, and reinstates law and order. Amjad El-Samari. And a cyber friend from Baghdad. Doesn't sound like any picnic over there, does it? Do you see the nightly news when they talk about that situation? And mostly we see it in Baghdad, the car bombings that take place. Baghdad being a huge, sprawling city. Can you imagine taking a city of similar size, perhaps... what shall we say? Atlanta? Maybe the Phoenix area, both of those slightly smaller than Baghdad. Can you imagine the city of Atlanta, for example? 20, 30, 40 people a day getting blown up, blown to bits. Their body parts all over the street. Vehicles being blown up. Can you imagine that every single day almost? Can you imagine the horror that would bring to an American city if it was there? And yet, we Americans look at the situation and go, oh, well, you know what's happening over there. It's happening over there so it doesn't happen here. That absurd statement.
But I always try and put myself in those people's places. And I think it's impossible to look at what goes on there now and try and even remotely put yourself in their position. I just can't understand how that must be there. I don't know how these people are strong enough to take this. How can they go on with their daily lives? How can they go out and do their marketing? How can they go send their kids to school? How can they wait at a bus stop for a bus that may blow up when they get onto it? Or a taxi? I don't know. They're very strong people. Very, very strong people. But every time I think about that, my God, what if that were happening in the United States of America? The horror with which we would look upon such a situation, and yet it's happening almost daily in Baghdad, and American people are going, oh, well, it's someplace else. I don't know. Hate to see it that way. I love great quotes, and I was reading a book recently about Dwight Eisenhower. And I admire Dwight Eisenhower, despite what my father always talked about Dwight Eisenhower. He didn't think he was a bad man. You know what it was? My father was mad at Dwight Eisenhower because when the war was over, both political parties went after him. He really wasn't a Republican or a Democrat before he became president. He actually sat down after the war and kind of was courted by both parties. Really, that's what went on, and he decided to become a Republican, and my father would have probably loved him forever if he'd have become a Democrat, but he didn't, and the rest is history. But there are some great quotes from Eisenhower, and one of them says, I hate war, as only a soldier who's lived in it can, only as one who's seen its brutality, its stupidity. War settles nothing. And one of the other statements I consider a great one. If all that Americans want is security, they can go to prison. They'll have enough to eat, a bed, and a roof over their heads. But if American wants to preserve his dignity and his equality as human beings, he must not bow his neck to any dictatorial government. And I fear we have one of those in Washington right now. Don't think Ike would approve of these fellows who are in control in Washington, D.C. right now. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have your call. How about a new caller today? How about someone who hasn't called the show? Give us a call. Let us know where you're at. I heard from a gentleman in New York the other day. He was Greek, and we were talking about the little puppy dog happened to have right now called Kukla, and that is a Greek name for doll. And I guess this gentleman was Greek, so he knew exactly what we was talking about, and we had a nice conversation with him. That was the day we got bounced off the air with our cable being sabotaged. Anyway, our phones would still work that day. Interesting. Very interesting situation that Goss is leaving today. DeLay, of course, got out. We have some others who will be going to prison soon. Will we have a Dick Cheney resigning before long, do you think? I kind of think we will. I don't think he'll make it through all of the term. I think they're probably even now planning on some sort of a political strategy to take Cheney out and put somebody more agreeable in so that they don't suffer with that Cheney anchor around their neck up through the presidential election in 2008. If they take him out right now, who would they put in? Most likely Condi Rice, don't you think? Put in Condoleezza Rice as vice president, and Cheney would retire because of his health. That's what they would say. Might as well take Condi out of Secretary of State. We don't need a State Department with this Bush administration anyway. So that'd be a good thing. Yeah, lots of them are bailing off the ship, like rats off a sinking ship. And conservatives are bailing off the good ship Bush. And by conservatives, I mean the ones who are appalled by the spending and the cronyism that that have squandered our surplus and run up this huge deficit that we so often talk about. Not the so-called conservatives who want their, want to micromanage all things sexual and beat you up with their version of what Christ isn't. Get a load of these numbers. Fascinating numbers. I love political numbers and work these out for you. Just 33% now of the public approves of Bush's job performance. 33%. And we've seen some lower than that, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt and give him 33%. The lowest of his presidency, that compares with 36% approval in early April. 45% of self-described conservatives now disapprove of the president. That is an enormous number. 45% of self-described conservatives now disapprove of this president. That's trouble. Just 1/4 of the public approves of the job Congress is doing. A new low in the Ipsos polling and down 5 percentage points since last month. A whopping 65% of conservatives disapprove of Congress. An amazing number. A majority of Americans say they want Democrats rather than Republicans to control Congress by a 51-34% margin. That's the largest gap recorded by an AP Ipsos since Bush took office. Even 31% of conservatives, imagine this, 31% of conservatives want Republicans out of power. And the souring of the nation's mood has accelerated in the past 3 months, with the percentage of people describing the nation on the wrong track rising 12 more points to a new high of 73%. 6 of 10 conservatives say America's headed in the wrong direction. Man, oh man. 73% think that the country's on the wrong direction. Fascinating numbers. Never thought I'd be quoting numbers that high about that subject. That's truly, truly appalling. It really is. What are we going to do here? Let's pause for a little tune, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come all you black and Hispanic boys, we'll keep you poor so you got no choice but to join the army in your prime and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. On the hill and who's watching the valley, who's in charge of it all? God bless the army and God bless our liberty, that comes the rest of it all. Hey, I'm in a position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq, get back on the track. Let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
Oh, yeah, America first. You know, I was just looking over some of the posts on the Democratic Underground about the program today. And early in the program, we were talking about who would make a new CIA director. Would it be Ray McGovern? Who could be this? And somebody that often listens to the program, and I'm afraid I'll mangle their screen name on Democratic Underground. Poyute, I guess that's how you pronounce it. I often see that name on the program. Said, I think I'd have a better chance of being named director of the CIA. It wouldn't be so far-fetched. I did read the I did read the Hardy Boys Detective Handbook when I was young. That's a good answer. That's a good answer, that's for sure. And Dudley Do-Right, of course, said, true, but I can guarantee you that you would do a better job than anyone Bush will nominate. I wonder... And by the way, Dudley brought up the name of the group that Ray McGovern founded is called Veterans Intelligent Professionals for Sanity, and great group. They've done a great job. Hey, let's go to the phone, see who we have on the phone right now. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I'm enjoying your show, and I just wanted to say, and I forgot what I called.
Hey, let's go to the phone. See who we have.
We can hear your radio in the background.
I'll find it. Find the thing to turn it down on. Wait just a second. Okay. I'm sorry. My computer has been acting up, and I wanted it didn't want to turn off in the right place.
Oh yeah.
No. Well, you were talking about who would be the next president, the presidential. My hope is Al Gore.
Yeah,
for the Democrats.
I'll go for that.
Great hope.
I'll go for that. I most certainly will.
And I did look up online about Hillary, and on her site, her website, she's got a letter on there to her constituents about the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It's written last year, I think in November. It's very thoughtful. I skimmed over it, so I can't really give you the gist of what it says and all.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear the letter that you read about from the lady in Iraq or the gentleman in Iraq.
Yeah.
You already read that.
Yeah, I'm just saying how bad it is there. It's just a bad situation for them.
I hope that they know that there are many of us who really lament that situation for the people over there, that we do care, and you know that I just think it's an atrocious outrage.
It is.
How they're being done. I mean, it's just unbelievable that our country could be so cruel, the people in leadership of our country. And the gentleman that stood up to Romney.
Oh, to Rumsfeld. Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern.
Rumsfeld. And he was he reminded me of Jesus talking to the scribes and Pharisees, who were the rulers of the day and were the real religious people of the day. And they just thought that they were just so wonderful and so good, and everybody else was so terrible. And he told them that that the publicans and the harlots would go into the kingdom of heaven before they would. I mean, you know, he plain out spoke, you know, so I think it's really okay to call them a liar, call a spade a spade.
Certainly it is. That's what he did.
As far as whoever who will be running for the Republicans, I don't know. Do you think it Jeb might?
Just something keeps telling me that he won't, but you know, nothing would surprise me.
You never know with those people.
You know, if they can't come up with who they want, he might come riding in on a big white horse. But the only trouble is, he's got a huge anchor around his neck with his brother. I really think America would hold that against him the way a lot of them held Bill Clinton against Al Gore.
You know, what they think is something different. You know, they don't think the way that we think.
That's a fact.
And they might try to get Condi in, but I'd love to see her. I really have to answer some tough questions, you know.
Somebody sent me an email. I'm looking here. Here it is. Somebody sent me an email that said that Conan O'Brien last night on his program said, oh boy, this is a good one. Said Condoleezza Rice is the most popular member of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Experts say that claiming to be the most popular member of the Bush administration is like claiming you got the good kind of herpes. Only Conan O'Brien would come up with that.
Yeah. Something else.
Oh yeah. Hey, thanks for your call, Juanita.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Hey, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello.
You're on the show.
This is Alice from Humboldt.
Hi, Alice. How are you today?
Well, I got through to you anyway.
Yes, you did.
I sure didn't yesterday.
Wow.
It's been very clear that the Bushes and the Bin Laden have been very close for many years. They have done any number of favors for Bush Jr. 911 was an inside job, and if you read that book, you will know it too. The evidence is overwhelming.
Mm.
No one wants to believe it, but our own White House did 911 to us. I'm sure of it.
Well, I hope that's not true. You know, you mentioned that that they have been friends with the Bin Laden family, which is documented and true. They've had business dealings with them over the years. I don't think a lot of people understand that the Bush family has had dealings with some other horrible people over the years. In fact, you take a look, you don't have to go very far back in the Bush family to see that they had business dealings with a certain tyrant during the Second World War. In fact, the man who started the Second World War, and they had business dealings with him in one of their companies, the banking and so forth. So they're not above being affiliated with almost anybody.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's hard to believe that it goes back that far, but I imagine it is.
Yeah, it was, I can't think which Bush it was now that they were involved in, was it the Union Bank at the time, and they had dealings with Adolf Hitler and so forth, and ended up having their the banking assets confiscated by the U.S. government and fined and so forth. So they'll deal with just about anybody, after all.
I hope we're getting close.
Yeah, well, I think we are. Yeah. I really do think we are.
Yeah, I do too. I'm a little bit happier about it.
Yeah. Hey, Alice, okay. Thank you for your call. Good to hear from you, my dear.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, bye-bye. We were talking a bit earlier about who will be the Republican that comes up. How'd you like to be a Republican running for office right now? Might be a bit uncomfortable, don't you think? I think it might be a bit uncomfortable. I got a few races around the country that I'm watching very, very carefully. Of course, I will be watching Ohio this year, the gubernatorial race there with Blackwell. And I think he's going to lose. I really don't think he really has a chance in that election. I hope I'm not jinxing the Democrats by saying that, but the Republicans will pour a lot of money into that race. They most certainly will, but I think they're going to lose this one in Ohio. And I just think Ohio might come back to the fold this coming year. And, of course, the Republicans, they got good old Johnny Mac over there, Johnny McCain. One of the columnists, I can't think which one, for the Washington Post wrote a couple of days ago about some of the contradictions in John McCain, calling himself a conservative. And yet he has, and let's face it, he's been willing to embrace causes and issues that are dear to the hearts of moderates and even liberals. When you really take a good look at John McCain, and you could look at other politicians this way as well, I call him kind of a political bisexual, willing to either get in the saddle or bend over and, oh, well, I won't say what I was going to say, anything to get elected. So before you come to conclusions here, I do want to point out that I do respect McCain for his courage and his service to our country during the Vietnam War. I do. But with that disclaimer out of the way, let me go on with what I wanted to say. In order to gain some access to the White House, when you stop and think about this, McCain had to swallow what he had to swallow, the bile that rose in his throat after Bush just savagely attacked his patriotism and his family in the 2000 primaries. It was awful. Probably the dirtiest politics that I think I've seen in my lifetime. He tried hard to get Bush to commit on the anti-torture legislation, only to have Bush whack him from behind the knees through one of his now notorious signing statements. And for you folks who don't know what these signing statements are and how many times Mr. Bush has used them, I hope you will take the opportunity to take a good look and figure out what these signing statements are all about. Quite often, he will have a public signing of some bill, and we know how they do it with all the people sitting around him and handing the pens out to everybody that signs and so forth, and make a big PR stunt out of the whole thing. And then as soon as everybody leaves the room, Bush does the signing statement, which pretty much just undoes everything that was just done and knifes these people in the back. And most often they don't even know about it. They haven't taken time to even find out about it. So keep that in mind, what these signing statements are about. And now we've got McCain cozying up to who I think is the dark master of evil and bigotry, is old Jerry Falwell. All in order to get his ass elected president in 2008. Could you really want that job that bad to cozy up to the likes of a Jerry Falwell? No, not in my lifetime. Oh, no. He's got this desire to be all things to all people, McCain does. And I really think amongst Republicans anyway, he's he's kind of, you know, being a farm boy, I tell the story, he's kind of a white crow amongst a bunch of black crows. And there's a strange thing about crows, if you don't know about crows. They'll kill someone that they think is different. They will. And these Christian fascists in the Republican Party are just waiting to sink their teeth into John McCain's throat. There's no question about it. Make no mistake about it. Senator McCain, they will come after you. They will most definitely come after you. And I don't care how much you suck up to Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or James Dobson. The evangelicals are going to come after you, Johnny boy. They will. And the only thing is you've done such a great job of destroying your own credibility. They won't have to do a whole lot to finish the job. I'm so disappointed in him the past few months. Although we're so far apart politically, I at least had some respect for the man, maybe having some credibility and some dignity and some honor, but he's given it all away when he goes and meets and sucks up to the likes of a Falwell or a Robertson or a Dobson or a Bob Jones. Has he spoken at Bob Jones University yet, I wonder? Haven't kept track of it all that close. I wonder if he has. God, I hope not. that'd be the... All right, I get an email from somebody that wants me to please tell that Conan O'Brien quote one more time. All right, here it is. This is quoting Conan O'Brien. I wish I had thought of it myself. Condoleezza Rice is the most popular member of the Bush administration. Experts say that claiming to be the most popular member of the Bush administration is like claiming you got the good kind of herpes. I got to tell you, I'm going to start watching that show. If he's telling stuff that funny again, that's a little late for me, though. Man, oh man, that's a slam right there. That I'm sorry, Condi. And you know, we were talking the other day about all the good news that's coming out of Baghdad, and there is so much of it. You know, the letter I just read you from my cyber friend in Baghdad, and how they're having over in that particular area of town a whole hour of electric every day, and once in a while they have some running water. And lots of times they can't sleep at night because it's too hot. And the ones that are fortunate enough that can afford gasoline, because it's quite expensive there as well, keeping in mind they're one of the top oil-producing nations in the world, and gasoline is expensive there. It wouldn't be because of Halliburton's hauling it for them. But they can hear, you know, generators running everywhere at night to run an air conditioner or a fan, most likely, so that they can get some sleep, because it's damn hot over there. But these are all the good things, you know, that they say in the American press isn't talking about every day, the good news, you know, that's coming from over there. So I found this good news about what is going on in Baghdad. So it says, so Baghdad is currently getting an hour of electricity a day because of an insurgent attack, and they're hoping to get it back, to 6 hours a day like it was before. The rebuilding of the country has essentially come to an end. Outside of the Green Zone, and you all know about the famous Green Zone, this is where they take the American reporters and congressmen to show them how nice things are in Baghdad. They seldom go outside of the Green Zone because it isn't safe. It's a monumental understatement. Things are not going very well. We can't even brag about painting schools anymore because they can't find anybody willing to do it because it's too dangerous. They shoot people who paint schools over there now in Baghdad. But the good news is, and we had to hunt a little ways to find the good news. 3 years after a U.S.-led invasion ousted Saddam Hussein's regime, only one major U.S. building project in Iraq is on schedule. And it is right on schedule. And I think, given all the circumstances, this is absolutely remarkable. So don't anybody claim that we don't bring up good news when there's good news. This building project is on schedule and within the budget. the massive new American embassy compound. Okay? This fortress-like compound rising beside the Tigris River, now that's nice, it's waterfront property, got a view, will be the largest of its kind in the world. Now keep in mind, we have relations with Russia, Moscow, with France, Paris, with Great Britain, London, many great countries around the world, many important countries around the world, many very rich countries around the world, and influential countries around the world, but we build the largest, most expensive embassy in history in Baghdad, okay? That make any sense to anybody, all right? But I digress. The fortress-like compound rising beside the Tigris River will be the largest of its kind in the world, the size of Vatican City, or 80 football fields, or six times larger than the United Nations compound in New York City. Remember, this is Baghdad we're talking about, on about 104 acres. That's just slightly smaller than Central Park in New York, which I think is 160 acres. Anyway, more useless trivia. With the population of a small city, it is designed to be entirely self-sufficient. Wouldn't it have to be? It will have its own defense force and self-contained power and water plants. Wonder if they have like a dry cleaning store and a grocery store and have all that stuff too. Maybe maybe a Target and a Walmart, and I don't maybe getting carried away with that. The high-tech compound will have 21 buildings. Well, maybe one of those would be the dry cleaning store. Do they dry clean those? No, the studio audience told me no. We'll have 21 buildings reinforced to 2.5 times usual standards. Some walls are said to be 15 feet thick or more. Imagine that. 15 feet thick wall scheduled for completion by June 2007. The installation is touted as not only the largest, but the most secure diplomatic embassy in the entire world. The $592 million facility is being built inside the heavily fortified green zone by 900 non-Iraqi foreign workers who are housed nearby and under the supervision of a Kuwaiti contractor, according to a Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. But at least, thanks to the Bush administration, we are successfully completing our salute to the great imperial carcasses of the past. Yet another underreported victory of Operation Iraqi Freedom. So don't anybody accuse us on the Guy James Show of not bringing you good news. There it is. Our largest embassy in the world in Baghdad, Iraq. I mean, I would have thought it like be in Liechtenstein or someplace like that, but Baghdad, Iraq, largest. Wonder, wouldn't you love to hear Bush explain that? Why we got the largest embassy in the world in Baghdad, Iraq? I certainly would love to hear the story behind that. I really would. Have to be interesting reading. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. And also, on the good news, I was going to talk a lot about this today, but before I forget, we did talk at the beginning of the show, you know, about this resignation we had today a little earlier, and as you could tell, I was feeling a little down about it. Yeah, I'm feeling down about it, because after all, you know, I did predict it last week, and I could see it coming, and I just feel bad that one of our local guys here would be involved in that sort of thing. But I want you to keep your eye open for something, lest you think I just horsing around here and that was a lucky guess about what I said last week. I want you to see if his name comes up linked with a man by the name of Brent Wilkes. Brent Wilkes. Remember that name. Okay? You see if old Porter's name doesn't come up linked with a man named Brent Wilkes. Betcha it does. Just betcha, I betcha, betcha a dollar that those guys have been chums for a while. Betcha they have. And I betcha that's exactly why Porter Goss resigned today. Might have something to do with a house full of whores. Who knows? Might have something to do with these gambling card parties. Who knows? But it might well also have something to do with a man named Brent Wilkes. And finally, today on the program, hardly a day goes by that I don't mention our good friend, the drug junkie, the convicted felon, Rush Limbaugh. I was innocently riding down the road today, minding my own business, and I accidentally pushed the wrong button on my radio, and there was the pill-popping drug junkie himself talking. And he started saying something that was interesting to me, so I thought, well, I've got to give this a listen, because his logic always fascinates me. It really does. I listen sometimes with awe at Rush Limbaugh's logic. And he was talking today about the price of gasoline and how he thinks it's terrible. Stay with me on this. How he thinks it's terrible that people are calling for conservation of oil and gasoline. That no, that is not the answer to our problem. We need to burn gas. We need to drive just as much as we ever did, or maybe more. And that puts more money into circulation, therefore bringing our economy up higher. This is the logic of... I'm not kidding now. I'm not kidding. This is the logic of Rush Limbaugh. Buy more gas. And that'll put more money in circulation. The thing is, you and I know whose money that is in circulation, and we also know where it'll all end up. In people like his pocket, not in ours. But that's the tip of the day. Get in your car, head down to the gas station, fill her up, and go out and just drive like hell all you can this evening. Run a half, three quarters of a tank out of it. Those of you got pickup trucks and don't get good gas mileage up north, just get in them and drive them around. Drive to Columbus and back to, you know, wherever. Burn $35, $40 worth of gas this evening and then go buy some more tomorrow. That's Rush Limbaugh's trick to bringing the economy out of the little bit of doldrums it's in right now, is buy more gas. So I just wanted you to know that. Evidently, he's way ahead of me on the learning curve on that sort of thing, because I never learned that sort of thing in school. I never learned it in econ class, either in college or in high school. And so I've got to go back and brush up a little bit, because I'm so dumb, I guess, that just doesn't make sense to me. So I've got to brush up on my econ a little bit this evening, and I promise that I will, so that I can try and figure out why I'm so far behind Rush Limbaugh on the logic of that. Oh, my God. And he said it with seriousness. But, yeah, these liberals, they right away, they start talking about conservation. They start talking about solar energy. They start talking about hydrogen cars. Oh, there's plenty of oil. There's plenty of gas. Oh, well. Hey, I've enjoyed being with you today. I really have. We've talked a lot about a lot of interesting things today. Remember that name, Brent Wilkes. Don't forget that. We'll talk about it next week again, I'm sure. Do want to remind you that you are listening to The Guy James Show. We would appreciate it if you'd donate a buck or two to the show now and then over at www.theguyjamesshow.com. We need your help with the program to keep it on the air if you enjoy it. And we hope you'll help us along with that. Hey, it's Friday. Oh, yeah. And all week long, you've heard from the radical, right? Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great weekend, everybody. I plan to.